You're listening to the Foul Ball Area Podcast with Matthew Atkins, now available on Spotify, SoundCloud, Podbean, and Apple Podcasts. Welcome to the latest episode of the Foul Ball Area Podcast. I'm Matthew Atkins. We've got Trey Lyle joining us as the co-host all the way from Kansas once again. And this week we have another very special guest, a guy who wears so many hats that I don't know what to introduce him as, but we'll go with the play-by-play voice of the St. Cloud Rocks. Evan Hughes is joining us this week on the podcast. Evan, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me on, guys. Love the work that you guys do for the sport of baseball.
So you are the voice of the Rocks up in the Northwoods League, a summer collegiate baseball league like the Coastal Plain League that David Cunningham is going to work in this summer. With everything that's going on, we've had four leagues cancel around the country now. Have you heard anything about the Northwoods League?
Yeah, you know, the Northwoods League has done a really nice job of being transparent with players and front office staff and interns. They put out a statement initially right around when everything started to cancel, within the first week or two of that middle of March when everything started to close in the sports world, basically saying that they were monitoring the situation and that they felt like they had enough time just to kind of monitor everything. And then about 2 weeks ago, they put out a statement saying that because the state of Wisconsin has a stay-at-home order that runs through May 26th, which is the day of our season opener, that the season won't start on that day. So that was all that they said. I think that they are still extremely hopeful that a season can be played in the Midwest. And I think that they did a really nice job, even though they were a little vague in the release, doing a good job of leaving fans and others to believe that there will be something this year for Northwoods League baseball.
And Evan, for people who really don't know what the Northwoods League is, can you give us kind of maybe a summary or a little background on the league and its history?
Yeah, the Northwoods League is getting ready to enter its 27th year of hosting some of the top collegiate baseball players in the country. It is a 22-team league with teams from North Dakota, Thunder Bay, Canada, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, Iowa. It is a 72-game wood bat league. The teams play 72 games in 77 days. There's a first half champion, a second half champion, and then there's 1 week of playoffs at the end of the season. And it's a great way for not only players to get a start in baseball, but as well as front office staff, as well as broadcasters like myself. I firmly believe that it has some of the best talent in the country. There's a lot of things that the Northwoods League offers that other leagues don't offer. And I think that the Northwoods League rivals the grind of minor league baseball better than anybody else because of the fact you're playing every single day with only five off days over 3 months. It's produced talent like Max Scherzer, Chris Sale, Curtis Granderson. A lot of really great talent has come from the Northwoods League, and it's just been an honor to work in it the last 2 years and looking forward for my third year this coming summer.
It's a lot of big names out of the league. I didn't realize they had that many big alumni like Max Scherzer. I mean, that's best pitcher in Major League Baseball right now.
Yeah, it was really cool. Actually, I believe, Matt, correct me if I'm wrong, but the last two All-Star games, or if it wasn't 2019, it was 2017 and 18, Chris Sale and Max Scherzer both started the All-Star game. Yeah. Not only are they both Northwoods League alums, but they're both alums of the La Crosse Loggers.
Wow.
So they actually came from the same team. So when you go to La Crosse, actually on their video board, they have a really cool intro to every game showing Chris Sale and showing Max Scherzer. And it's just, you know, it really goes to show that talent comes from, you know, all over the place. And what a small world that two of the best pitchers in baseball over the last decade have come from one team.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive that they can boast alumni like that. Some of these leagues, like the Valley League here in Virginia or the Cape Cod League, they're known as kind of the, you know, oldest and premier leagues in summer collegiate baseball, but they're still kind of small. They're all kind of centrally located in one area. But like you said, the Northwoods League is spread out all over the Midwest. I mean, what allows the league to be so big where it is almost like a minor league?
Well, I think that, you know, it started off as five teams in 1994. And then I think that that was one of the goals for the Northwoods League, was to grow into something different from other leagues. Because like you said, the, you know, the Valley League, the Cape Cod League, the Coastal Plain League, they, you know, every league has their own strengths. And I, you know, I think to some players, maybe it appeals to only travel 40 minutes for road games. But I think that the idea of the Wood Bat League and being scouted and learning how to travel and be on the road, I think really drew to players, and that's how it kind of started to grow. But there, you know, one thing I like about it though is that, you know, you have, like, for instance, in St. Cloud, our closest team is 40 minutes away, and our rival, the Wilmer Stingers. But then, you know, a bus to Bismarck is 6 hours. A bus to Thunder Bay is about 6.5. So you get kind of the best of both worlds. And so, I actually think that teams kind of being farther away from each other provides a certain draw to maybe some players and coaches around the country, college coaches that want to see players have to experience that for 3 months.
Evan, a couple of leagues have already basically said they're not going to have their season this year. The most notable, obviously, is the Cape Cod League, which is probably the most historic and most acclaimed college summer league. This is kind of a two-part question. One, what do you think would be the financial effect of the Northwoods League shutting down? Do you think some teams might have to fold as a whole? Or how do you think they're going to survive this? And the second question is, if they do have a season with probably a lot more talent available, could this be one of the better seasons that the Northwoods League could have?
Well, I think that not just for the Northwoods League, I mean, so many other leagues, I mean, it's honestly heartbreaking to think about the financial ramifications no season has, because, you know, a lot of these teams in the Northwoods League have very small front offices. You're talking about 2, 3, 4 people wearing so many different hats to put a season on, from selling tickets, from getting players and to talking with sponsors. I mean, there's so many things, and it all goes into that season. So, you know, I don't know what financial impact it will have, but of course it will have one if there is no season. I know personally for me, I am staying optimistic, and I believe that something will happen. But I think to answer your second question, you know, going from the financial side of things, it doesn't happen. If there is something, some part of the season, I think the talent's going to be extraordinary. I've been reading a lot of articles from other teams in the league just saying that there's such a hunger for guys wanting to play summer ball. I mean, having their season cut short, just as conference play was getting going for a lot of the teams around the country, they really want to play summer ball. And they really want to show the talent they have in front of scouts. So I actually think that this year in the Northwoods League could be one of the best years of summer collegiate baseball we've seen in the Northwoods League. I think about the Dream Showcase event, just how many guys might get invited to that and how many teams they might have this year. But of course, you know, you want to think about that. You also want to think about the safety of people and the players and the umpires. And it's kind of juggling two things. You really want it to happen, but you want it to be safe. So I just hope that you know, the right decisions made and that we can play baseball in a safe manner. And like you said, Trey, we can see some of the best talent in the country playing in the Northwoods League this summer.
Yeah, that's one unintended consequence that could happen, is seeing a lot higher concentration of talent in the leagues that do end up having their seasons. Of course, that's not going to be good for the leagues that have to suspend their seasons this year. You know, it could have negative effects going forward if players play in a separate league this year and they end up liking that league better. That's one of the things I was actually worried about with the Valley League, is if players or coaches leave the Valley to go somewhere else this summer, they might end up liking that league better and not come back next year.
Yeah, and I think that's one thing that you find, Matt. I mean, from other leagues, a lot of guys, once they go to a team, for the most part, a lot of guys stay to that team for whether it's one summer or two summers. You know, one of the many reasons why I'm thrilled for this Rocks team this summer is, typically, in the Northwoods League, you know, you play a summer, and then the goal is to get drafted the next year, even though you do have a couple freshmen or sophomores. But the Rocks have over 12 players returning from last year. Two assistant coaches, same field manager. Typically, you have about 3 or 4, like I was saying. So the continuity coming back is something that's really special. And that's one thing that I think could really make a summer collegiate team a lot more fun, is when everybody knows each other and you know, the continuity's there from the year before, and there's not that feeling out period at the beginning of the season that I know that you know all about. So, yeah, I think it's fascinating to think about what happens if some leagues play and some don't, and what that means for other leagues. And I'm sure for other leagues, they want their players to go play, right? I don't think that other leagues want to hold them from others. But, I mean, you're right. I mean, all it takes is one coach or one reason to fall in love with going back to a team or a city. And you're right. That's something I didn't really think about. That could be a potential big deal to leagues that don't have their season this year.
Evan, another hurdle all these teams are going to face is having games with fans. I think if you look at the bigger scale, a major league team can kind of take the burden of not having games with fans. But these teams, these smaller league teams, we talked about it on a scale of like a Pulaski Yankees, they rely a lot on ticket revenue. I feel that it's the same thing for like the St. Cloud Rocks or teams in the Northwoods League, where they're going to rely heavy on ticket revenue as part of the revenue service, because they really don't have any major broadcasting deals like the major leagues can rely on. So how much do you think having fans or not having fans at games is going to be a key factor in the decision whether they have games or not?
Well, here's an article from MLive.com a couple of weeks ago. They interviewed Dick Raddatz Jr., who's the president of the Northwoods League. I want to read a quote from that article. He said, quote, "For me, I've never thought playing with no fans was realistic on anybody's part. Why are we going to subject our players, umpires, coaches, and training staff to exposure if we're taking measures not to expose the fans? For me, it's either all or nothing. If we're going to play games, it's going to be in front of fans or we won't play." Close quote. So really, he's laying it all on the line there. And he said that a couple of weeks ago. Either we're all in and we're going to get the ticket revenue and we're going to get the money in. So the Northwoods League has already said they're not going to take the approach of not having fans. And I can understand that. You go back to the financial side. I mean, that's what brings in a lot of revenue are people in the stands. So, you know, I think that it would be really tough to imagine a scenario where they do that. And like we talked about with smaller front offices and smaller teams, they need that revenue. So if you're going to bring in players and you're going to have to pay for, you know, meals and travel, there has to be some income coming in. So I actually kind of agree with that stance, and I'd be curious to get your thoughts on that. I think that might be the best approach. Either all in, we find a way to get fans in the stands, or maybe not play at all.
I completely agree with you. I think from a financial standpoint, I think unless you have another source of major revenue, like a TV deal, I think that's why you're not going to see games. That's why the whole discussion about is college football going to happen this season, maybe move to spring, is because there's not going to be fans at this game at the games. Because if you look at pro football relies on revenue from TV deals and those other things, while a big chunk of pie for college football is for the actual schools is those ticket revenues, season ticket holders, et cetera. And I think it's the same thing as you get a smaller and smaller leagues where ticket revenue means a whole lot more, because you're not going to have these big TV deals, because if you live in California, who you're not going to want to see a St. Cloud Rocks game where you know none of the players. You're going to want to see a Giants versus a Giants game, for example. So I think the fans being at games is going to affect the smaller teams more than it'll affect the major teams a lot more. So I completely agree. I think their focus has to be all in. So I think I completely agree with that statement.
Yeah, I do like that all-in mentality, because especially for these smaller, you know, summer leagues, even the low minor leagues, that they're not going to make money any other way than having fans in the ballpark. So I do like that all-in mentality. And, you know, that it is about the players and developing the players, but it also, a large part of it is about the fans. And it's a big community gathering. It's a big part of these local towns. So I mean, they wouldn't be what they are without the fans.
Yeah, and believe me, I want the season to happen so badly. But, you know, the fans, like you, I mean, you hit the nail on the head, Matt. You know, I mean, the St. Cloud community treats the Rocks like it is a minor league team. And, you know, on Friday nights, you know, we draw in about 2,000 fans, and everyone's packed in at Joe Faber Field. And safety, as it said in this article and from everyone I'm talking to, and of course, rightfully so, safety is the number one priority. And it pains me to say it, because I really want baseball to happen this summer. I want to be in St. Cloud. I mean, really badly. But, you know, it has to be safe. And it's about, like you said, it's not just about the player's health. It's about the fans' health. I mean, think about when you sit down at a baseball game, you're elbow to elbow with the people you're sitting next to. And you know, I just it's going to be really interesting to see, though. The one thing that I think is trending in the right direction is I continue to stay optimistic that we're going to have some kind of a season is that, you know, with the government coming out with this, the phases that they're talking about for these states to adopt, you know, what does it look like numbers wise a month from now? You know, is there a chance, again, the statement the Northwoods League put out, I don't know when they're thinking about, you know, starting the season, but maybe it's June 15th, maybe it's July 1st. Can you play a second half of the season? Can everybody still be safe? And I think that's a win-win right there. If you could still play half the season, still bring in money, and still play with players coming in, I think that's a win-win for everybody if everybody can stay healthy. So I think the next 2 or 3 weeks is going to be really important. And will states like Minnesota, Wisconsin, North Dakota, Iowa, will they start introducing these phases and start reopening some businesses, which is going to get the ball rolling, I think, by maybe early June, mid-June, we can play baseball again.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that the phases is a good way to go about it because we really don't know what anything's going to look like. The situation could improve or it could, you know, hopefully not, but it could get worse or, you know, stay about where it is. So we really don't know what's going to happen. So taking it step by step, I think, is the best way to do it. What's your plan, your mentality right now? Because you said you got finals next week, but then opening day was supposed to be May 26th. You said they're going to have to push that back. So when are you planning on heading up to Minnesota?
Well, I'm kind of playing it by ear right now. I was initially planning on coming out about a week before the season started, as I did last year, just to meet with the front office and get ready. And then, you know, get there before the players do so I can meet them. But I'm prepping. I mean, I'm looking at our roster. I followed along with guys during their college seasons that were already signed, so I could kind of have an understanding months prior on how they're doing. We're doing a couple of Rocks Q&A sessions on Instagram Live with returning players, so it's been great to kind of reconnect with them and get their thoughts as well on just how they're doing during this quarantine. But, you know, our organization and myself, we're prepping as if there's going to be a season. And I can tell you what, our incredible front office of Scott Schreiner and Mike Johnson and Jeff Hag and Will Meyerhoff, I mean, they're, you know, even though there's a little bit of a question in the air, there's uncertainty, we're all prepping like there's going to be a season. And I think that's the perfect way to attack it, you know? So, you know, again, I just feel lucky to work for an organization that's so focused on delivering such a great product for St. Cloud and the Northwoods League. And so I'm looking forward to it, and I'm enjoying my prep, and I'm just sitting with my fingers crossed, hoping that we get a breakthrough, everybody stays safe, and we can play baseball.
Evan, I think another effect to if we don't have games in the Northwoods League will be some water bottle tricks on your Snapchat stories. I believe it's Matt Johnson, right, who's the one that can crush some water bottles. Mike Johnson, excuse me, that can crush some water bottles pretty quickly. So how upset would you be if you're not able to post that each week, or are you going to start practicing so you can do it?
It's a great question, Trey. I live with our general manager, Mike Johnson, who has turned into much more than just a colleague. He's a role model of mine. He is just such a positive and great influence in my life. And Mike, our general manager, before every home game will crush a water bottle. So if you've ever seen somebody put a water cap around their lips and then crush the water bottle forward, and he sucks it down in like 2 seconds. So last year I would film Mike in creative ways crushing a water bottle before home games. So it's an annual tradition. Every game we will have to we're not going to think about the negative, but if that happens, trust me, we will find a way to get the incredible talent of Mike Johnson to social media, and one day we're going to get him sponsored. He's going to be on like America's Got Talent for his water bottle chugging talents.
You know, I know that's a little bit of a silly thing, but it is something that I wasn't really thinking about just now. But another aspect of summer baseball is the relationships that you have with the people that you're working with. I mean, spending last summer with the Harrisonburg Turks, I heard the coach, Bob Weiss, talking about players that he coached 25 years ago that he's still in touch with. I mean, you have these relationships because you're spending an entire summer with people. And if you don't have that this summer, that's heartbreaking as well.
That's one of the things that has made my experience so incredible with the Rocks are the relationships and the people that I've met. And I use this as an analogy for people who don't know summer baseball all that well. You know this, Matt. It's like going to summer camp and interacting with the same people every day. Just because you're not doing free time and you're not in a cabin doesn't mean, you know, you're not sleeping on a bus and watching movies with them and, you know, talking to them during BP. You're doing the same things every day, and a bond starts to form. And that's the thing that, I mean, when, you know, as a broadcaster who loves to tell stories and loves to get to know people, that's the thing that makes it most sad for me, is that if there's no baseball, there's no storytelling, there's no relationships that get to be built. You know, I mentioned that we have our same coaching staff coming back, our same front office. I mean, it's awesome to build upon those relationships. That's why people go back to summer camp, right? Hey, I made great friends with Matt Atkins and Trey Lyle. I want to see them again. You know, I've got a group message with the coaching staff and a couple of others that, you know, we talk every day, and it would just break my heart if I don't get to see those people. And I know the players feel the exact same way. I think that's part of the reason why we have over 10 returning players coming back. Of course, the great coaching staff, the great team, the great organization, but the relationships. I mean, people made lifelong friends last year. And I think that is one of the saddest things about potentially not playing baseball is no relationships this year.
All right. Well, Evan, thanks so much for coming on this week. I really appreciate it. And I hope things will work out. I hope everything, the situation will get better and you guys can have a season in the Northwoods League this year.
Well, I appreciate that. And I can tell you what, I look forward to next summer for sure, when everybody across the country, you know, your league and the Cape Cod League and, I mean, everybody, we don't have to worry about this. We can sit back and watch some of the best baseball players in the entire country play baseball. And so fingers crossed we get as much in as we can, and everybody stay safe. You guys stay safe. And thanks so much for having me on. It means a great deal.
Thanks, Evan. Always great to hear from you, my friend.
All right. Thanks once again to Evan Hughes for joining us on the podcast this week. He is the voice of the St. Cloud Rocks, so hopefully he will get to have a season up in Minnesota this year. You know, Trey, you pointed this out to me yesterday. We didn't touch on it the entire time that we had Evan on, but it was like a Hanover County reunion.
Yes, it was. Evan obviously went to my main rival high school. He went to Patrick Henry High School, where I went to Lee Davis, but it was pretty cool. I got to meet a very young Kevin Hughes his sophomore year of high school. So a pretty cool kid. I've known Evan for a while. He's one of the best. I think you're going to see this guy be on Sunday Night Baseball or work for ESPN one day. I joke with him. So one of the best in the business. He's so knowledgeable about everything. He'll call a couple of Virginia Tech baseball games. He's closely connected to the softball program as well. So you'll see Evan do a lot of play-by-play, and definitely go follow him, check him out. He's one of the nicest, humblest guys you'll meet. And hoping he gets to head up to Minnesota this year and call some baseball.
We had both you guys on for 20 whole minutes, and neither of you guys talked about tomatoes the whole time. Isn't that what you're famous for in Hanover County?
Yeah, and obviously when our two high schools play each other, it's called the Tomato Bowl. Well, I don't really like tomatoes, so I won't mention it. So that adds to it.
You know, that
well.
Reminds me, I need a copy of that video of you dressed as a tomato dancing that Paul Van Wagner tweets out
YouTube,
like every day.
That's all I'm going to say. It's on YouTube.
Right, I need to find that. Before we dive into some more baseball topics, got to touch on some of the biggest news of the week. Orioles outfielder first baseman Trey Mancini wrote in a Players Tribune article yesterday that he has been diagnosed with stage 3 colon cancer. He was first alerted to the cancer during spring training when he was undergoing routine physical and blood work, as the Orioles reported to spring training. His team physicians noticed that his iron levels were low, so he got sent to the doctor and they discovered a tumor in his colon. It was removed, and then he was diagnosed with stage 3 colon cancer. So he wrote a really long and really touching article in the Players Tribune. He said that if baseball returns in 2020, it will likely be without him. He did say he's having a positive outlook. He's surrounded by great people and people that he loves. And so he sounded like he's very positive and doing well with this. He is starting chemotherapy and it will take, I think he said, 6 months, the treatment. So if there is a baseball season in 2020, he will not be playing most likely. And he is undergoing chemotherapy to treat this cancer. So our thoughts and prayers with Trey Mancini and his family and the Orioles organization during this time.
Definitely. I think you said it as best you can. It's so unfortunate for a franchise that's looking for anything positive right now in the Orioles with their struggles over the recent couple of seasons, being one of the worst teams in baseball, and Trey Mancini definitely being one of the bright spots, one of the premier players, definitely at his position in all of baseball. And to see him get diagnosed with stage 3 colon cancer is just a blow to that franchise, and for Trey, a blow for him. And we hope he can get through this and be able to get back on the baseball diamond once again. And like you said, prayers to him, his family, and the entire Orioles organization.
Definitely, definitely keeping him in our thoughts and hope that he can beat this thing. Over the past couple of weeks on the podcast, we've done some looks at potential Hall of Fame players. We started out with Joey Votto, and then last week we talked about Joe Mauer, and we've pretty much agreed that they're both going to be in the Hall of Fame. So today we're going to talk about another player who has a shot at making the Hall of Fame. He's currently on the ballot, been on the ballot for a couple years, but hasn't gotten too much attention, hasn't gotten enough votes to make it into the Hall of Fame yet. His highest voting percentage was 19% this year. We're talking about Andrew Jones, the former center fielder for the Atlanta Braves, and I believe he played a little bit for the Yankees also, so played for both of our favorite teams. His career batting average, .254, 434 home runs, and 1,289 RBIs. He won 10 gold gloves during his career. I think his home runs and his gold gloves are what stand out the most out of Andrew Jones's career. Only other players to win 10 or more gold gloves are Ichiro Suzuki and then 4 Hall of Famers. So that alone seems like it should give him a pretty good shot. But like I said, the highest percentage of the vote that he's ever received was 19% this year. And of course, you have to receive 75% of the vote to make it into the Hall of Fame. So I'm not too confident that he will make it. He's trending upwards, but I'm not confident that he's going to end up in Cooperstown.
Yeah, and this also might be a case of who he's on with in terms of the card. Like, obviously, Derek Jeter has been on it with him. I believe Ken Griffey Jr. was on it with him. Like, he was on those cards. Mariano Rivera was on it with him. And those take up votes. And when you're only allowed a limited amount of people to put on, you got to think. And I think this could be something where it might be his final ballot that gets him on. And I think you'll see. I think he needs to get up into that 30-40 range at least in the next ballot to have a real shot, because 19's not going to do it, obviously, the way you trend up. And so he's got a long way to go to get to that, I believe, 87%, right? Am I right?
75%.
75%, so 3/4 of the ballot. And so still a long way to go to get on there. But I think statistically he is. And I think another thing is, like, was he ever one of the best players at his position? And you could argue maybe, like, the gold gloves kind of put it there. And I think that the batting does. So I think you could argue he is. He also was one of the first players to really play at a young age and be really successful that you've seen a lot now, like the Trouts of the world, the Vlad Juniors of the world, the guys who basically made the majors at like 19 years old and have gone on to dominate. So I remember Andrew Jones as a 19-year-old on the Braves teams and being one of the best players on the field as a young prospect. So he definitely had a lot of high expectations from when he came in at 19 and maybe didn't live up to them entirely. And that might hurt him in terms of the Hall of Fame ballot.
And I think another thing that hurts him is his lack of contact hitting. He was definitely a power hitter, as his 434 home runs can tell you, and a career .486 slugging percentage. But he only batted above 300 once, and that was .303 in 2000. His career batting average is .254. He only has 1,933 hits, so didn't even get to the 2,000 hit threshold. So I think the lack of contact hitting could be another thing that hurts him. Now, some of his stats are higher than those of other Hall of Fame center fielders, but his wins above replacement are below average for Hall of Fame center fielders, and the Jaws metric that you can look at to basically predict whether or not a player will make it into the Hall of Fame, his Jaws metric is below average for Hall of Fame center fielders. So a lot of the newer analytics stats like wins above replacement and this Jaws metric, those don't have him at a great shot to make it in. And then his lack of contact hitting, I think that's another thing that hurts him.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's kind of a statistic anomaly Andrew Jones is, because he's one of those type of players that maybe wasn't as efficient in a time where efficiency is such a big thing. I think you look at it, why Mike Trout is so good is he's so efficient. He gets on base. He's a dominant center fielder. And I think Andrew Jones kind of played in an era where it's more power hitting, but like as he came like towards the end of the power hitting area. I know we're in an era where it's home run or bust, but back then it was more of a contact based game. So his playing style was more suited for today's game than it was probably that mid-90s kind of late 90s kind of game where it was you get two people on base and then you get your Mark McGwire, Barry Bonds in the world to hit them home. Where now it's just, if we can get two of our four guys to hit a solo home run, we're doing really good.
My final verdict, I'm going to say he doesn't get in. He might, you can make an argument for him, but I'm just going to say he'll trend upwards for a couple years, but then with new guys getting on the ballot and some great players that are retiring, I think he doesn't end up getting in.
Yeah, I agree. I think he doesn't get in, and I think it kind of is a shame because Andrew Jones was a very talented, very, very great baseball player, but it's something where it's like played at the wrong time. Like, I think if he played now, he'd be one of the best players in baseball. Like, he fit today's game a lot more than he did back when he did play in that early 2000s, late 90s kind of era.
Coming up in the next week or so, we're going to have an article up on the website looking at the best baseball games to watch while we're stuck in quarantine, the all-time best games that you can watch while you have no live sports to tune into. So Trey and I will each come up with our list of top 10 games. We will put that out on the website for you guys to read. And then next week on the podcast, we will talk about that and discuss, compare our lists, see how they match up.
My guess is they're going to be very similar. I think both of us are going to pick games probably more in this time frame because you kind of pick the games you remember. I think so far the earliest game I picked was 2001, and everyone can probably guess what baseball game that is in terms of that. But it's going to be pretty interesting to see, just an idea to do when you're stuck like quarantined to watch baseball. I think every Tuesday night, MLB, ESPN's been doing a MLB game replay, so that's kind of been exciting to watch. A lot of these are on YouTube, as I've been doing research. So definitely check YouTube out for some games. And if you have any suggestions for games, tweet us at Trey Lyle, at Matkins21, at Foul Ball Area. We'd love to hear from you about any suggestions you want to see on our list.
Yeah, I'm sure we will have a lot of the similar ones. Like you said, there are a lot of games on YouTube. MLB TV, I think, the past two seasons are free. Anyone can watch any of the games from the past two seasons. So there have been some good games the past 2 years, so you can check those out as well. Some games that I might put in my top 10 list are the 1995 World Series, where the Braves won against the Indians, which that game or that series is actually being broadcast this week on Fox Sports Southeast. So it's too bad I don't live near the Atlanta area, or I could be watching the Braves win the World Series all week this week, but I'll just have to find it online somewhere.
I don't have Fox Sports Southeast. I have Fox Sports Kansas City. So, and I've been airing some Royals replays. And yes, I will get a Royals game in there as well as a little preview of my list.
All right, some real quick news before we wrap up today's edition of the podcast. Trey just pointed out that MLB fans will now be allowed to get refunds for games that are currently not being played due to the COVID-19 pandemic. That's from ESPN. They have a story up outlining how fans are getting refunds for the games that are not being played due to the pandemic. Vin Scully took a fall at his home last week and was hospitalized, but he has been released and is back home and is safe. He actually released a video through the Dodgers' social media accounts narrating his
road to recovery.
Yeah, narrating his road to recovery and what happened when he took this fall and was hospitalized. And as with all Vin Scully clips, it is a great listen. So go check it out if you haven't already. I think that's going to do it for this week's edition of the podcast. If you have any final thoughts, Trey?
None. Just another video to check out was we were recording this on Tuesday, the 28th. Definitely go watch Jeff Passan's interview with Scott Van Pelt. Last night he quotes Wu-Tang. Honestly, just watch the clip of him quoting the Wu-Tang Clan because it is fantastic. And Jeff Passan is quickly becoming one of my spirit animals, and quickly, since he joined ESPN, maybe my favorite insider, because he is, one, he provides great information and knows pretty much everything there is to know about baseball, but like, I could just, this dude's fantastic, and I mean, he quotes so many things. His Elmo voice is hilarious. Him talking about the Astros scandal and Jose Altuve's tattoo was fantastic, and then him going dollar bills, y'all, yesterday was, again, fantastic. So shout out to Jeff Passan, who's killing it right now.
Yeah, Jeff Passan is great. One of the best baseball follows on Twitter. One of the best writers out there. And Scott Van Pelt is obviously one of the greatest Sports Center anchors of all time. So when you put the two of them together, you know it's going to be a good interview.
Definitely. Scott Van Pelt, the GOAT, in my opinion, like, best to be on the Sports Center. I think I remember growing up seeing him and the late Stuart Scott and like, oh, that's my dream job right there. So always try to watch SVP at night and him. And if you ever need another good laugh, just any Scott Van Pelt interview with Tim Kirchner, he breaks out the Baltimore voice and it's literally fantastic because Tim Kirchner laughs at everything he says. And Tim Kirchner's laugh is great.
You know, Tim Kirchner's another great baseball guy out there, too. I love just all the random knowledge and stats that he has. He's a great guy to read his writing and follow him on Twitter.
Definitely as well. If you ever need a baseball fact, look up Tim Kirchner. He'll have it because he knows everything there is to know about baseball. So it's pretty incredible. I think it's always a good time right now just to kind of enjoy what you got with the great baseball staff that ESPN has and Fox Sports has as well. Been able to hear Ken Rosenthal also is great, but Tom Verducci speak. And so Tom Verducci talked about his job and working for Fox Sports, and he's great as well. So a lot of great baseball writers out there, highly recommend all of them. And there's a reason why they have premier jobs is because they're really good at what they do.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's episode of the Foul Ball Area Podcast. For Trey Lyle, I'm Matthew Atkins. Thanks again to Evan Hughes for joining us this week. And for all of you out there, thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.